Adoption just recognized us with a certification as a community wildlife habitat, making Charlotte the third largest wildlife-friendly community in the country and the largest east of the Mississippi. So how did that happen and what does it mean? We're going to find out this hour, and we have several local folks to give us their perspective, whom we'll meet in a moment. But we're going to start by welcoming Colin O'Mara to the program. Mr. O'Mara is president and chief executive officer of the National Wildlife Federation, and he joins us by phone from my old stomping ground, Reston, Virginia. Welcome to the program, Colin.
Mike, thanks for having me on.
What exactly is a community wildlife habitat?
Yeah, so many years ago, the National Wildlife Federation realized that it wasn't just important to protect big kind of landscapes and kind of away from urban areas for wildlife, but it's actually important for us to have enough habitat where we live and where a lot of species live. And so we launched a program really encouraging cities and counties and towns across the country to do their part, even within an urban environment, to provide native plants and habitat for wildlife, to make sure there's water and make sure there's places for wildlife to raise their young, and make sure there's places for cover for littler species to kind of hide from predators, and really trying to encourage folks to kind of live in harmony with nature and using it as a way to both beautify a community, but also make the community a little more resilient and also a little more attractive, frankly, to all kinds of talent, young and old.
According to your website at the National Wildlife Federation, the certification as a community wildlife habitat is a recognition of efforts to, this is a quote, to green landscapes and buildings, improve air and water quality, restore vital wildlife habitat, and improve the health and well-being of inhabitants one property at a time. And at first glance, it sounds like much of those things benefit people, not necessarily wildlife.
And exactly right, Mike. And I think one of the cases we try to make is that when we actually do things to help wildlife, humans as a species unto ourselves actually benefit incredibly as well. And so whether that's cleaner air and cleaner water or slightly more resilient communities or just greater livability, there are a lot of benefits from living in harmony with nature and moving away from some of the kind of the concrete jungles that we maybe thought of in the 70s and 80s, and beginning to bring more vegetation and more life back into urban corridors.
And now I know you're coming to Charlotte on Saturday to give us this certification, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But how did Charlotte come to your attention at the National Wildlife Federation in the first place?
Yeah, so Tim Gaswicki, who'll be with you in a few minutes, is the executive director of the North Carolina Wildlife Federation. He brought me down to see their annual meeting and their big Governor's Award dinner. And I had a chance to meet the folks from Crown, which is one of the chapters of NCWF, and it's the Charlotte Reconnecting Ourselves with Nature group. And this group came up to me after the award ceremony, and they were all excited, talking about the great work they were doing. And so I as soon as I got back to Washington, I asked my team, I said, let's learn a little bit more about what they're doing, because they're really, really excited. And they were already pretty far down the pathway working with our team to make Charlotte the largest city east of the Mississippi to be recognized as a backyard habitat and as a community wildlife habitat. And it was just really exciting seeing so much local energy and working with the city folks and working with other partners in the area to get the project off the ground. And so I committed that day a few months ago, saying, once you guys are done, I'll come down. Let's do a great event with the mayor and all the local habitat stewards, and we'll make a big deal about this. And in the interim, we actually did a survey of the entire country looking at which communities had done the most kind of for wildlife over the last couple of years. And Charlotte popped up in the top 10 of that list too, independently. So I'm very excited to be there on Saturday, because I think the city is doing fantastic things. And this goes along with the incredible leadership on trees and kind of being a tree city and, kind of the beautification efforts that have taken place over many years now.
Is this how it works around the country where others, I've forgotten how many cities have this certification, but it's a decent number of cities that have this certification as a community wildlife habitat. Did they come to your attention because they're brought to your attention, or do you have your tentacles out there kind of looking at communities around the country and encouraging them to do things like this?
It's Yeah, it's a little bit of both. And so in some cases, we'll, if there's places where we see a critical density of folks that are doing the individual household certifications, we'll kind of encourage them to say, look, you're already halfway there. Why not kind of go the rest of the way and certify the entire community? Other places, you have a dedicated team of either volunteers on the just from the community, from neighborhood groups, or in some cases, it's city officials. But we got about 100 right now that are really going strong, and another 50 that are hoping to certify in the next year. So, I mean, the program's accelerating in growth pretty dramatically. And I think one of the big reasons is that it's one of the kind of clearest ways that communities can really help the declining pollinator populations that we're seeing across the country. I mean, monarch populations have declined by more than 90%. Native bee populations have declined dramatically. We're seeing impacts on different insufficient habitat for different migratory birds. And so this is one clear way to get at those kind of systemic kind of bigger regional problems in a way that actually is very impactful, and you can kind of see the results on the ground almost immediately.
You're giving us this certification on Saturday at 10 a.m. in Marshall Park. We'll have information. We do have information about that on our website at WFAE.org. You'll be there with a bunch of folks from the local Wildlife Federation chapters, and people from the mayor's office will be there. But you're doing this in Marshall Park. I don't know how well you know Charlotte, but Marshall Park is probably one of our more urban parks. It's not a suburban park. It's not out there in the wilderness. It's like smack dab in the center of the city. Are you making a comment, or maybe you had no choice about where this is happening, maybe I should ask my other guest this question, but are you making a comment about wildlife habitats by having this in an urban park?
Yeah, so I don't know exactly how the decision was made for Charlotte, but across the country, we do try to hold these kind of events in urban parks.
Okay.
And the point we're trying to make is that nature is not someplace that you go to. It's not some far off destination. That it's actually something that you have to live in harmony with, and that it's fantastic to load up the camper and drive 2 hours to the state park or the national park. But there are incredible things that we can do right close to home, just outside of our front door, or in the park right around the corner, to really beautify our cities and help a huge range of species close to home. And so we're really trying to make the point that there's a lot of good habitat work that can be done across the country in cities, and then kind of thinking of cities not as black spots that migratory species have to jump over, but are great places to actually kind of continue their journey from to wherever they're trying to go. And there's great examples, whether it's the park we're talking about in Charlotte, or places like Central Park in New York is one of the best places to bird in the entire country, because there is so little other green space available that you see incredible numbers of species coming through there. And so, and by having more food for wildlife, better native plants for pollinators, you can really make these areas that are so vibrant already because of the recreational opportunities, you can also make them vibrant for wildlife, which is just teeming with biodiversity.
Now, I said a moment ago that Charlotte will become the third largest certified wildlife-friendly community in the country on Saturday. We don't like that. Who are number one and number two? You see, we like to be number one. So, who are number one and number two?
I will give you the. You are number one east of the Mississippi.
Okay.
Austin right now is number one. I'm actually not sure who number two is. I should know that.
So, Austin, Texas, is number one.
Yes. Yeah. And okay. And Austin.
They got coyotes.
they got a little bit of everything.
Armadillos?
Exactly. They've been able to, they actually had a great partnership with the city government, where the city government actually put forth a little bit of money to encourage more low-income folks to participate. Because, the certification process does cost a little bit to, have some more native plants and make sure that the kind of that you're kind of hitting all the right kind of parts of the certification process. But they're doing some great work, but Charlotte is right on their heels. And so every time I'm traveling across the country talking about what cities are in leadership roles, Charlotte is kind of right at the tip of my tongue, because I think that the work that Crown has done is just really something it's inspiring, but frankly, it's also very replicable. I mean, there's no reason that we couldn't do something similar in Raleigh or something similar in Asheville. I mean, there's other places that I think could really learn from what Charlotte's doing, and maybe take this to be more of a statewide effort in North Carolina. And at that point, let's go across the border to South Carolina. Let's go up north. and really try to create something that is exceptionally regionally impactful.
So if that happened, if more cities in the state, in North and South Carolina, around the country for that matter, became certified community wildlife habitats, what would our world be like? What would the country be like? How would what we see outside our window change?
I think it's a great question. I think from a species point of view, just the sheer density of wildlife that you would see would increase significantly. And you know, when you think about monarch populations, or you think about even simple things like planting a native tree will support 10 or 20 times more caterpillars, for example, more kind of diversity of caterpillars than planting a honey locust or a Bradford pear or some kind of invasive species. If you have that number of insects, the amount of kind of the sheer volume of species of those that broader number of insects can support allows much greater kind of diversity of the wildlife that you can see. So I mean, imagine a city that butterflies are extremely plentiful, and that you're seeing bees that are pollinating a much broader range of native plants, and then you kind of move up the food chain, if you will, and much greater diversity of birds, and then maybe you're eventually with a little more kind of habitat connectivity in some of these corridors, maybe you're seeing more mammals coming along. And at the same time, healthier amphibian populations and reptile populations. Imagine every kid growing up in Charlotte, not just seeing pigeons and squirrels, but also seeing a kind of a much broader range of species every day. And that's kind of the second thing, which is, I think right now with the average kid in this country spending 60 hours a week in front of some kind of electronic screen, one of the best opportunities you do to have to connect people with nature is to bring nature to them and make sure it's outside their window, make sure it's on their school ground, make sure that it's in the parks that are around them. Because as much as I want to get every kid into the the incredible mountain ranges to the west, or to the barrier islands and to Hatteras in the east, there are a lot of kids that aren't going to travel much further out than maybe 30 miles from where they live.
We
need to figure out ways to engage kids where they live.
Okay, I only have a minute left, but I want to find out about this monarch population. Is it declining because of something we are doing or not doing, or is it declining because of climate change? What's going on with the monarch butterflies?
Yeah, lots of factors. We've lost more than 100 million acres of habitat across North America. And so that's one big reason. You've had impacts on the habitat in Mexico. You combine that with using pesticides and things like that to destroy habitat as farmers are trying to squeak out more acres for crops. And then you throw climate on top of it. It's kind of the perfect storm. And the populations have gone from more than a billion down to about 50 million over the last 15 years. So we need habitat across the country to bring the populations back.
Colin O'Mara is the president and CEO of the National Wildlife Federation. He joined us today from Reston, Virginia. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Mike.
And he will be here in Charlotte for the Celebrate Charlotte Naturally event, 10 a.m. noon on Saturday in Marshall Park, to give us the certification as a community wildlife habitat. Information about that on our website at WFAE.org. When we come back, we'll talk to three people who are intimately involved in this certification process and how it came to be that we get it. And we'll do that in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Birdhouse on the Greenway, creating habitats for birds and other wildlife by offering feeders, houses, and water features. Piper Glen, next to Trader Joe's, bringing people and nature together. BirdhouseOnTheGreenway.com. And the UNC system, offering over 100 flexible online programs in education to help you become a North Carolina teacher. Options at programs.northcarolina.edu. Well, for years, speaking of education, the only options for higher education open to African Americans were what have come to be known as historically black colleges and universities. Today, though, HBCUs face a lot of challenges, from low graduation rates to low enrollment rates, because they're no longer the only game in town, and competition for students is intense. We're going to talk with some HBCU leaders around the state about that and their strategies to stay afloat and thrive tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Reim Show, more than half of Americans believe same-sex couples should be allowed to get married. But a number of states have banned such unions. analysis of arguments in a case before the Supreme Court on whether the Constitution guarantees the right to marry a same-sex partner.
The Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, joining us to share a state and local perspective on our becoming a community wildlife habitat is Tim Guestwicke, Chief Executive Officer of the North Carolina Wildlife Federation. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Ernie McLaney is President of Charlotte Reconnecting Ourselves with Nature. CROWN is the acronym for that. They are the local chapter of the North Carolina Wildlife Federation. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Mike.
And Chris Matthews, not the guy from MSNBC, but the Division Director of Nature Preserves and Natural Resources for Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation, is also with us in the studio. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
How big a role did the three of you, or one of you, or one of your organizations, or all three of your organizations play in getting this certification?
Well, Mike, I think it's a collaborative effort, and Colin talked about the National Wildlife Federation perspective, and as the state organization, our job is to foster awareness and appreciation for nature and conservation and provide opportunities for folks to connect to nature, and so we create our own chapter network. So CROWN is our local on-the-grounds chapter that is literally implementing the establishment of wildlife habitats in Charlotte. So it really is think globally, act locally. Mm-hmm. So we have national, state, and then the local chapter implementing this. So it's a collaborative.
So Ernie, if I understand this, and as Tim just said, CROWN began the qualification process in 2013. Is that right, or did it actually begin with versus Tim's group?
Right. We actually started it. You have to apply to the National Wildlife Federation and make a statement that you're going to go for the certification, and they send you some requirements based on your population, things that are already going on in your city, and you have to meet certain goals. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 18 months, we worked feverishly to accomplish those and sent our paperwork back in.
So put it into perspective. How big a deal is this?
For Charlotte?
Yeah.
It's a pretty big deal because you look at Charlotte and you see construction, you see transportation, you see highways, and you see sprawl, and you don't think about wildlife, per se. We used to be called the city tree, seat of trees. Mm-hmm. Still may be, but we've kind of gotten away from that, and we're trying to get reconnected with those things that make North Carolina, and Charlotte in particular, a special place to live, work, and play.
So because we've gotten the certification, we're getting it on Saturday, but it's a fait accompli, does that mean our work here is done, or is it just a stepping off point?
I think this is the launching point. You know, this is a great accomplishment. Charlotte's always had a civic pride and a large stewardship component. And what this is bringing awareness to the fact that each citizen can make a difference, whether at work, at their place of worship, or at their children's school, or at their home. So it's a launching place. And we have a lot more work to do for migratory birds, for monarch butterflies, to deal with water quality, water quantity. So it's a launching place. It's an inspiring accomplishment, and it's kind of the launching place for the next steps.
I think that Colin said that Austin, Texas was the number one community in the country that's certified as a community wildlife habitat. What are they doing? Do you know? What are they doing that we're not doing? What have they done to put them in first place?
Really, Mike, that's based on per capita and population. So they haven't done anything better than Charlotte by any stretch. And Charlotte certainly is a larger component of the other certified communities in North Carolina, Montreat, Lake Norman, Matthews, Concord, all of which our local chapters have spearheaded the effort. So it's based more on a per capita. So Charlotte just is based on its city size.
As a population.
That's right. Yes, sir.
So Austin's bigger than us? We'll have to stop that. Mm-hmm. Where were there things that we did when you decided to try to get this certification that helped us get to that place? Or were we already doing things and you just made the National Wildlife Federation aware of them?
There were some things already in place. When we started looking at certifying Charlotte, we found there were already over 600 backyard wildlife habitats, and that can include schools, churches, and businesses. So we already had a great starting place. So we just worked on that and increased the awareness of it and followed the requirements set by the National Wildlife Federation to earn the points. It's a point system based on your population. Mm-hmm. And we put all of that, our team, together.
You said that one of the things that this certification does, Ernie, is that it raises our profile as a greener community. And in the scheme of things, what does that mean for Charlotte?
It means that we can have both economic growth and sound quality conservation mm-hmm. and create quality, healthy ecosystems at the same time. We've got some incredible natural resources that Chris Matthews here is helping to push out in front of the public and get more people to visit our parks and nature preserves. So it gives a new value, a crown in a jewel in Charlotte's crown, it might be, to elevate us in the city.
Chris Matthews is the division director of the Nature Preserves and Natural Resources at Mecklenburg Park and Recreation. We keep hearing that Mecklenburg County is underparked. Yet despite that, we have this designation, this certification, which is in part based on green spaces and greenways and things like that. So does this help or hurt your cause to become more aggressive in getting more parkland? If we've done so well without it, why do we need it, I guess is the question.
Well, I think what we're talking about here with wildlife certification is a combination of public and private space. And I think where we're lacking is areas where we have public space for parks, nature preserves, greenways. We don't have as much as we should have. But certainly having this the Wildlife Federation come in and certify Charlotte just helps with the bigger picture of habitat, awareness, green space just throughout the entire city and throughout the county.
And we do have a thrust. We have been trying to protect our tree canopy, and we'll talk about this goal of having 50% of our tree canopy cover the Charlotte area by 2050, which is not that far away, but it takes trees a long time to grow, so we have to start now. We do have a mindset, do we not, in this part of the country to preserve nature?
I think in general most people understand that that's really, really good for people in general. I mean, it's a very healthy thing to be able to preserve and protect nature. The wildlife certification that we've received certainly does that for people, you know, locally in their backyard. That really helps as you look at the bigger picture of trying to connect these areas up with nature preserves, greenways, your church, your school. I think it's just an overall awareness that really, you know, we're talking about here.
Ernie?
And to balance this off, we are faced with a strong, growing economy here in Charlotte, and with that comes development. And what we've created is isolated pockets of quality ecosystems, and what we're trying to do is increase the number of these habitats so instead of silos, we can create corridors for the wildlife to navigate. Wildlife doesn't have things like Match.com. They have to meet in person.
And nor do they have highways.
Exactly. Right. So we have to create those opportunities to help them sustain their populations.
The Greenway is, I know this from personal experience, the Greenway is helping to make that happen, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's a corridor, and it's a pretty long one. And when you add in the Thread Trail Greenways system as it builds out, That will be the fruition of what you're talking about, right?
It'll keep us going in that path. We have to recertify every year. Mm-hmm. So we have this checklist and these points to score every year. And with the increase of the Greenway and the trails and the park systems and more habitats in churches, schoolyards, businesses, we will continue to raise that level.
And you mentioned, Tim, that we joined Matthews, Lake Norman, Montreat, and I don't know whether you mentioned Weaverville, but I know they're on the list among the communities certified as community wildlife habitats. In April, Concord was the largest community wildlife habitat in the state. Have we leapfrogged them? Is that what's happened here?
Well, we've leapfrogged them, but Concord did a wonderful job. And again, it's attributable to the folks on the ground. The Concord Wildlife Alliance is the local chapter of the North Carolina Wildlife Federation that was the conduit to get this accomplished. So the local chapters are literally folks with common goals for wildlife and habitat that are implementing this. And as you look at North Carolina versus other places in the country that don't have the luxury of a chapter, a local group to foster this and accomplish it, it takes a lot longer. Concord was the quickest mm-hmm. community certified in the country due to the chapter efforts there.
This is kind of like economic development. It doesn't matter which community does it. We all benefit from it. Is that the 100%, sort of thing? 100%.
As citizens of this state and of this country, we all benefit. The North Carolina Wildlife Federation works on elk in the mountains, red wolves in our coast, wildlife refuges, state parks. But to have a citizen and people helping to foster places for wildlife habitat is a working relationship.
And you have said that Charlotte is a haven for wildlife. And I'll bet you a lot of people don't think of it that way. Why do you say that?
No question it's a haven. From our barred owls throughout downtown Charlotte, Myers Park, some of the historic neighborhoods, to Mountain Island Lake, the drinking water source that's got waterfowl galore, to our butterfly and bird populations. There's no question it's a haven for wildlife. And again, it goes back to the combination of nature preserves, greenways, and people in their own property, mm-hmm. landscaping, gardening for wildlife. People want to make a difference, and this allows them that opportunity. Hang a nest box for brown-headed nuthatch. Plant a milkweed patch for monarch butterflies. And together, we're creating large patchwork quilts of wildlife habitat that's very important. Mm-hmm. When Colin mentioned that the monarch butterfly population is down 90%, it's all hands on deck now to plant milkweed. So we'll be using this certification on Saturday as a launching pad for a massive monarch butterfly campaign.
Well, Kelly on Facebook is ahead of the game. She says, I have my own milkweed patch to attract monarch butterflies. And you're encouraging other people. I'm not even sure what milkweed looks like. And you're encouraging other people to do that. So if you put that in your yard, what does that look like?
Well, there's common milkweed, there's swamp milkweed, there's butterfly weed, there's different varieties of the native species. Mm-hmm. Butterfly weed is a lovely bright orange flowering plant that grows up to 2 foot tall. It's wonderful. And it is the only plant that the caterpillar eats and lays its eggs on that gets us to the monarch butterfly. So one of the big things about planting and gardening for wildlife is planting a diversity of native trees, shrubs, wildflowers, and providing the cover and the roosting areas for our native species. So a diversity of plants equals a diversity of wildlife.
And we've asked on Facebook or Twitter our listeners do to support wildlife habitats in their yards, and as they come in with answers over the course of the next few minutes, we'll bring them to you. We have in Charlotte osprey. We have barred owls. I've had one on my deck. We have falcons downtown. I've seen deer as close as the Park Road Shopping Center area. Interesting. We also have coyotes, a lot of them all of a sudden. And we have lots of raccoons. Just come to my house. You'll see the evidence of that. Some things are nice to have. Monarch butterflies, honeybees, nice to have around. We need them. Other things I'm not so sure about. So when you're talking about creating these wildlife habitats, You're opening the door to all wildlife, aren't you?
Well, that's right. I think
how do you control it?
I think the comment about diversity is important. I think we want a diverse, plant community. We want different kinds of trees, different kinds of wildflowers, and the same holds true with our wildlife. You know, Park and Rec has a lot of information on the different types of wildlife that we have. We have over 315 species of birds and 600 species of moths and 50 species of fish, and it goes on and on and on. And I think the fact that we have this much wildlife here, we want to try and keep it.
Yeah.
And having this wildlife certification certainly does help that, because it helps to kind of link up our big nature preserves and our greenways with these areas that are in more urban areas.
We have been growing by leaps and bounds, and we've lost a considerable amount of our tree canopy just since the mid-80s. I think it's a football field worth of trees every single day or every single week, something like that. And this has been going on for years, despite efforts to change things. Now there are these billboard ordinances, which will cause some more trees to be knocked down so that we can see advertising. Are we making it really difficult for wildlife, or are we doing enough things to counterbalance what we're doing for growth and development?
That's a tough question, and it's one where we need to get the community involved to speak up and talk to your local officials and to let them know how you feel about some of these ordinances and some of these changes that are happening in Raleigh. And in the meantime, we can be doing something about that on a local level. As Tim said, you think globally and act locally. So we can find ways to counter that by establishing habitats in the vicinities.
Tim?
Yeah, I think we're at a point right now in North Carolina where the regulatory rollbacks are pretty significant. And so there's a balance between policy and what market-driven, non-regulatory measures for conservation can be. And so the habitat certifications, whether it's the backyard habitat, our faith program for places of worship, our wildlife and industry together program for workplaces. We have an island habitat program for the islands of the Catawba River. We have a wildlife-friendly development program for pre-grading, you know, wildlife and trying to protect terrestrial habitat. So these are ways that citizens can help, and I would agree with Ernie that we all need to be paying attention to what's going on in Raleigh, and that's what the Wildlife Federation does.
One thing that certified cities, and we're one of them now, have done is to add more green spaces by creating what you just talked about a minute ago, Ernie, and that is the more wildlife habitat corridors. Aside from the Greenway, how are we doing that here?
By communicating the benefits of the things that associate with the wildlife habitat, you know, the native plants, reducing turf, which is a monoculture, planting those plants that were here and evolved with our local wildlife.
So what you're saying is not necessarily, you know, tearing up sidewalks and putting in greenways or clear-cutting areas that are geographically definable that you can put on a map. It's more like homeowners and property owners, not just homeowners, property owners, adding these natural areas that attract wildlife to the point where there are enough of them that wildlife can hop, skip, and jump from one to the other as opposed to going 5 miles to get to the next hospitable location.
And a great example of that is Meridian Place down Independence Boulevard. You look at Independence and you think, my heavens, we're destroying this planet.
Mm-hmm.
But the Meridian Place development down there is incorporating into that landscape quality pockets of green space, and they're going to turn those into wildlife quality with native plants and water.
Is it difficult to get people to do this, or is it easier to get homeowners to do it than it is to get, say, business owners to do it?
Well, it's an educational process. A lot of people just don't realize how it works, and they don't realize that you can substitute for about the same cost native plants for those that are not native. So it's just a matter of understanding what to do.
And native plants are better than, Colin mentioned Bradford pears. We had a whole policy of putting Bradford pears along every roadway until Hurricane Hugo came along and just snapped them all in half. What's wrong with a Bradford pear? Why are native plants better?
Well,
in 30 seconds.
Yeah, right now, Mike, our birds are feeding their young. And 96% of terrestrial birds in North Carolina feed their young protein, insects, and caterpillars. And white oak produce 450 caterpillars. Bradford pear, maybe one. So if you want to feed your birds, plant native trees.
We'll talk more about this and about the 850 certified wildlife habitats that have been created right here already when we come back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Jazz Arts Initiative. Grammy winner Delfeo Marsalis plays music of jazz icon Duke Ellington tomorrow for a Jazz Appreciation Month celebration at Blumenthal's McGlowan Theater. Tickets available at blumenthalarts.org. And Black Hawk Hardware presenting the Big Green Egg event Saturday, May 16th. Samples and demonstrations by the Big Green Egg demo team, locally owned and mismanaged since 1977. Black Hawk Hardware.com. More than half of Americans believe same-sex couples should be allowed to get married, but a number of states have banned those unions. Analysis of oral arguments in a case before the Supreme Court on whether the Constitution guarantees the right to marry a same-sex partner coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, and we are coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Women, children, adults potentially drowning in front of them and they can't get them out of the water in time.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
The government's case against David Petraeus revolves around 8 notebooks, each with a black cover.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the fact that Charlotte has been given the certification by the National Wildlife Federation as a community wildlife habitat. That certification will come our way on Saturday at a ceremony at Marshall Park. And you can get information about that on our website at WFAE.org. You can also get information about all the things we're talking about at NWF.org or CWF.org. Those are the national, NWF is the National Wildlife Federation, and CWF is?
NWF National, NCWF, the state affiliate.
NCWF,
yep.
Okay. One of the, you report, and this number changes almost every day, I'm told, that there are more than 850 certified wildlife habitats created in the Charlotte area, in backyards, in schoolyards, in churchyards, and other community locations. And it does grow every day. How has that happened? Because of you or because people are taking the initiative to do this themselves?
Both. There's a lot of information out there. When we have monthly meetings for the Crown Chapter that are open to the public. And at each meeting, we talk about the benefits of creating wildlife-friendly landscapes. So as that word gets out, we have handouts exactly how to produce that. People take that home and implement it in their own landscapes.
So 850 in a population of a million, which is about what we have here, is not all that many. You want more. What does it entail? What do I have to do if I'm hearing this program and I'm thinking, well, that sounds like a good idea. I could do that. What do I have to do?
Generally, the basic requirements is to provide food, water, cover, places to raise young for wildlife. And that can have many different looks to it. But through our website, crowncharlotte.org, you can find some more information and handouts specifically how to do that.
Well, now, food, water, cover. When you say food, are you talking about natural plants? Or you're not talking about leaving food out in a dish, right?
No, not necessarily.
You're not talking about leaving water out in dishes either, are you?
Bird baths, as long as you clean them out, you know, to keep them clean.
What about mosquitoes? Because they attract mosquitoes, bird baths.
That's true. But one thing you can do with that is you can wash it out every 3 days. It takes about 4 to 7 days for the larva to become.
And it also means, correct me if I'm wrong, it also means not using pesticides. Is that correct?
There are ways you can get around handling pests. And here's a thing that people need to remember. When you see holes in your leaves in your garden, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a good thing. It means you have a healthy ecosystem in your yard. So those insects that are eating the plants feed other insects and other lizards, other birds, things like that. So it's part of the cycle as long as it's not destroying your plants.
So we've talked about adding native plants and water sources and things like that. What should we remove if we should remove anything?
Grass.
Grass. Now them's fighting words, right? You have some neighborhood associations upset with you on that.
Well, we're
grass.
We certainly value, and I have a patch of grass in my front yard, but
I do too.
But turf and fescue. There's 45 million acres of turf in the United States, 500 square miles added every year, and it provides no value for wildlife. And it sucks up water. You know, a 25-foot by 40-foot lawn, 10,000 gallons of water to maintain it in the summer alone. The pesticides that are put on our lawns is 10 times more in America than all of farming combined. Mm. So by restoring habitat with attractive native shrubs, wildflowers, trees, in concert with some lawn areas is wonderful. And I'll tell you right now, Mike, my wife's a realtor, and the values of homes that are landscaped for wildlife, garden for wildlife, natural in concert with grass, are more valuable than non.
The restrictions aside, neighborhood restrictions aside, how would you do it? What would it look like? In our parks, one of the things I think about when I think about places like Freedom Park, aside from the trees and the sidewalks and the lake, is the lush grass that stretches out in all directions from that. So, I mean, it's pretty. The green grass is pretty.
Well, I think a lot of people equate some kind of sense of prettiness. You know, you think about a golf course. People love to be on the golf course. It's green and wide open. People like to walk around the lake at Freedom Park because it's green and open. You know, the interesting thing is the geese that we have at Freedom Park also like it green and open. So when we have a big patch of grass like that around a lake, we're just inviting geese to come, and we all know what geese do to our sidewalks, and you know, the operational staff and maintenance staff have to spend a lot of time cleaning up. And so what we've actually done at Freedom Park is similar to what people are doing with the wildlife certification, and that is we're taking some of the grass out, and we're putting shrubs in, we're putting more trees in. We're not closing it up, but we're trying to diversify the habitat.
So restrictions aside in neighborhoods, if you wanted to do this, what would it look like? Are you recommending this in the backyard? Are you recommending this kind of stuff in the front yard? And if you have a lawn in the front and a couple of bushes around the house, how would the look change?
What we did on our property when we bought it, it was total turf pretty much, and it still has turf in it. But what we try to do, because you've got a budget to deal with, is each year you take a little bit of that natural area and you expand it out into your turf. So you grow your natural areas and decrease the size of your lawn. As Tim mentioned, with the fertilizers and pesticides, we tend as a human race to think more is better, and so a lot of that runs off. So by reducing your lawn a little bit every year, what your budget will allow, and putting in a natural area, you're making a difference.
One of the things that people like about green lawns is that they're manicured and they are neat looking. And they're, you know, today, this was not this way when I was a kid, but today everything is edged and marked off, and it's very nice. It looks really good. But you're saying that let it grow. You're talking about less manicured look, aren't you?
Well, my yard is, I would think, is a nice manicured lawn. But at the same time, I have that so that I don't irritate my neighbors. I'm slowly increasing my natural area right before their eyes. So I'm decreasing that manicured look with a more natural, bushy shrubbery.
Is it more maintenance-free, or is it more maintenance for you over time?
It's actually less maintenance, because the native plants require less fertilizer. If you do your homework and research the plant, you can plant plants that get to a certain height and stay. Mm-hmm. You know, they're resistant more to disease. They can tolerate drought, which saves water, a number of things.
Now, I'm a little confused here, because although we're the third largest city to be certified as a wildlife habitat, we are the ninth largest city in the rankings of America's most wildlife-friendly cities, according to the National Wildlife Federation. Again, Austin, Texas is number one there, followed by Portland, Oregon, Atlanta, they're number three, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Seattle, Albuquerque, and Indianapolis. We're number nine, New York City comes in at number 10. How did New York City even make this list? Is it Central Park exclusively?
I think Central Park had a lot to do with that, absolutely. And I think, again, going back to why Charlotte makes a list, is the balance of public lands, i.e. our greenways and our nature preserves and our parks, along with what private folks are doing to restore wildlife on their property. So just like in North Carolina, game lands, parks are Great Smokies, but we need private citizens to help make a difference, and they want to.
So what's the difference in these two rankings? We're number three in the country as a community wildlife habitat. We're number nine in the country as a wildlife-friendly city. What is the difference?
I think the first survey came out, the top 10 came out first. It's good to be included in the top 10 on both. I'll take it.
Now, you operate, Chris, the park system operates 26 nature preserves. I'm actually surprised that we have 26 nature preserves. Does the general public know this?
I don't think most people understand we have 26. I think we have several nature preserves that most people are aware of. Latta Plantation Nature Preserve, Reedy Creek Nature Preserve, McDowell Nature Preserve. Those are the big ones. We have nature centers there. But certainly, you know, the 7,500 acres of nature preserves that we have in town, there are a lot of folks that don't know where they are, and some of them are small. We have some as small as 14 acres, and we have some as large as 1,300 acres.
So, and when you say nature preserves, what makes them different from the parks that you operate?
Most of our nature preserves, we limit the amount of development. You know, we don't have ball fields. We don't have tennis courts in them. They're really for passive recreation, so we'll have trails. We do have, you know, some amenities and some of them, like a shelter, there may be a parking area, and then, of course, the big three that we have, Lamy Dale has a campground and a nature center. But really, with a park, we'll develop a park property up to 50%, but with nature preserves, we limit development to 10%.
And do you also want to limit visitors?
We do not want to limit visitors.
Really?
I mean, we really
appreciate— Doesn't bother the wildlife?
We really appreciate people coming out and enjoying our nature preserves, and that's why we are dedicated to putting in additional trails. We want to get people out so that people can experience it. We do have a few properties that we primarily focus on wildlife habitat. Cowan's Ford Wildlife Refuge is one. But even still, we want people to go out. We have a great viewing stand, and it's one of the top birding areas on the East Coast.
Do you have lists of all these 26 locations on your website?
We do. If you go to parkandrec.com, there's a nature preserve section, and you can go on there and find out where each and every one of these nature preserves
is. Is it unusual for park services in a city to be working on and developing nature preserves, or is it just a matter of course for most park systems?
I think most park systems across the nation primarily focus on recreational park space. There are a lot of park departments and some big ones that do have nature preserves, but I think Mecklenburg County is probably has been and continues to be one of the leaders in really focusing on.
Why have we taken that path?
I think people recognized a long time ago that it was going to disappear relatively quick. Back in the early 90s, we started preserving large open space. We've done some projections with the Urban Institute at UNCC that shows by the year 2030, Mecklenburg County is going to be 97% built out. And so someone back a number of years ago realized if we don't start now, we're not going to have much, you know, here in 10 or 15 years.
Ernie.
One of the things that we're really concerned about, too, is we need to get our kids outside and connected, which is why they encourage families and people to come into those nature preserves. If we don't have kids connecting with nature now at an earlier age, they're not going to care that the county's built out 97%. They're not going to care that Ernie McClaney Foundation is building a major condo on the Blue Ridge Parkway. They're not going to fight that. So our kids need to be back connected with nature. I remember last week you talked to a gentleman about frogs and how you, when you were growing up, enjoyed playing with frogs and salamanders or crayfish. Our kids today don't have that, and we need to get them back to connect with nature so that they continue to protect it.
And that's why we've launched the Great Outdoors University. The North Carolina Wildlife Federation has for that very purpose, to get kids outside. And many of the destinations are the nature preserves here in Mecklenburg County. So it's critical to get our youth connected.
Chris?
And I think that's another reason why Park and Rec was so fortunate to be able to partner with Crown and the Wildlife Federation in this wildlife certification. Because if we can get people doing wildlife stuff right in their backyard, that just translates into more support for these public spaces that we have in our nature preserves and our parks and our greenways. So it's really just kind of working together as a community to help improve things.
I want to get back to lawns for just a second because Lydia on Facebook asks, any tips for dealing with homeowners associations' landscaping requirements while providing healthy habitats for wildlife?
Yeah, this has been an issue, Mike, for some folks, and I would say that the habitat certification program, by putting up a nest box or the sign, once you get certified, you get a sign. People stop by my front yard all the time and look at the signs. They see the birds at the bird feeders. They look at the lovely, colorful wildflower gardens for butterflies. So I'd say that little by little, planting a butterfly garden. You know, we've got big companies like Duke Energy and ReVenture Park and Vulcan Materials that are doing this on their property. Mm-hmm. Why are they doing it? They have the corporate mantra of turf. They're saving money. They're creating lovely edge habitat, wildflower glens, and they're putting up signs that say no mow zones, wildlife areas. So it's an awareness campaign.
You know, go ahead.
Belk Corporation here right in Charlotte just this month certified their campus as a wildlife-friendly habitat. So industry can do that if they just take a few steps and do the right things with the qualifications.
In addition to doing a recent show on frogs, we did a recent show on the 10,400 or so apartments going up around town, particularly up and down South Boulevard, and the 10,000 more that are on the drawing board. And this is a move toward more density because of the fact that the county is pretty much built out, and you have to go up and densify. Otherwise, the property tax base doesn't grow. What is that doing? And are these apartment developers putting in natural areas? Are they aware of this push to create more nature-friendly areas at all?
Mike, I think the certification and the ceremony on Saturday heightens the awareness. There's no property too small where you can't hang a bird feeder, where you can't put up a nest box, where you can't plant a native patch that together will help restore wildlife habitat for migratory birds, for butterflies, for our box turtles even. So protecting the creek systems, protecting our nature preserves, and even a little studio garden outside a condo is making a difference.
What has been the impact of the Greenway in this arena?
The Little Sugar Creek Greenway, I guess the one, you know, I think it's been a couple of things. It helps people get outside. It gives people a really high quality experience. It puts people in connection with Little Sugar Creek, which, you know, when I grew up here in Charlotte, and Little Sugar Creek was not a really fun place to be as a kid because there was
polluted.
There wasn't a whole lot going on in there.
Yeah.
From a natural perspective.
And then we covered it over.
And then we took the top off, and now we've restored it. And I think we're seeing, I mean, people recognize wildlife coming back. I think the Greenway just kind of helps people make that connection.
And that's just the beginning. We have a whole trail system going in, and that should help as well. That was Chris Matthews, Division Director of the Nature Preserves and Natural Resources with Mecklenburg County Park and Rec. Ernie McClaney is President of Charlotte Reconnecting Ourselves with Nature Crown, the local chapter of the North Carolina Wildlife Federation. And Tim Guestwicke is the CEO of that. 10 o'clock Saturday, Marshall Park, big doings as we become a certified community wildlife habitat. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
And support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Nexen Pruitts, lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court with regulators and at the deal table with offices in Charlotte and 7 other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level, Nexen Pruitt. And Historic South End Art.